Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. My name is Lori Strawn, and I'm joined by my co-host and friend, Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hello, Lori.
We are in the midst of Holy Week, wherein we celebrate and remember the events leading up to and including Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection on Easter Sunday. Today we turn our attention to a poem by Steve Turner, an English writer and journalist. It is called The Crucifixion Poem. You were one with the Father, then the Father turned his back on you. You felt forsaken, hanging there between heaven's thunder and the dank spittle of earth. For that moment, you belonged nowhere. You were love, cut off from love, truth nailed down by lies. You must have wanted to explode, to disintegrate, to disappear into a void, but that was forbidden, and that was the test. Your blood burst through your skin and ran down like sweat. Your sweat ran cold and drained into your heart. The universe caught hold of your pain. The sun went blind with grief. The earth shivered in shock. History was torn in two. I stood at a distance, my collar turned up, like a murderer witnessing a wrongful arrest. Well, Alice, the poem begins by talking about God turning his back on his son. We know Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me, as he died. Did God forsake Jesus at the crucifixion? Does God ever forsake us?
I have to really read this, or I do read this poem, from a very human perspective. So I keep that in mind as I comment today on things. So, no, I do not believe that God forsakes us, but what I think this... what the poet is trying to do, or what I at least understand the poet is saying here, is, you know, Jesus was fully human. And if we believe that to be true, we, I think, make the assumption that if we think our reaction would be, my God, why have you forsaken me? And we think how frequently that is our reaction to what's happening in our lives. I think it seems reasonable that we would make an assumption that that was Jesus' reaction to that. Whether or not that's what Jesus meant, I think that's an appropriate human interpretation of that. If Jesus is fully human, Jesus is going to react like we as humans think we would react. I was at a Methodist church this weekend for service with my mother-in-law, and the pastor gave a quotation that was his mother's quotation to the kids, and that was to say, Jesus doesn't always answer our prayers when we want him to, but Jesus is never late. So the answer is never late. And I think you could look at that in this situation. You know, the prayer that Jesus may have wanted answered by that day may not have been, he didn't get the answer he may have wanted, but he did get an answer that was on time from God. And we have the whole process of salvation history as a result of that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's almost reassuring to me that Jesus feels abandoned in that moment, because he really is Christ at his most human and most relatable in many ways, because we all feel deserted at some point in our lives by God. And
yeah,
it brings us back to a subject we don't like to think about, which is the actual suffering of the cross, which, if you really dwell on it, it must have been incredibly intense for Jesus to feel so forsaken entirely. I know for me, I like to kind of gloss over the horror of the crucifixion in order to get to that happy ending of the resurrection. But I think it does us good to sort of sit with that reality of the suffering, because if nothing else, it gives a perspective on our own suffering.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I mean, this is a small example of it that I've been thinking about now that we're in April. So April, 3 years ago in April, my mom died. So she, I have this very clear kind of journey in my mind of what it was like from April 1st of 2012 through the date of her death, which was April 26th, which is longer than Holy Week. But I was really reflecting this week on how hard it is for me to mentally go through this, the events that led up to the day that she died. But I'm sort of at a place this year where I think, you know, I kind of think that's almost like a Stations of the Cross experience that I would be, that would be useful for me to kind of go through this year and make myself kind of relive thinking about the last conversation I had with her, the last, you know what I'm saying, just to kind of reenact that. That's not the same. I will certainly say that's not the same, but it's an acknowledgement that that was a really suffering time for her and for me, and that there, but that there's a lot of value in it. There's a lot of redemption, and that I know the peace of being on the other side of it. And I think that's why we, I mean, I think the hope of that is a large part of why we go through the Holy Week process and journey and Lent and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting. I may get to that point sometime with my dad, but I have not been able to yet.
Yeah.
Well, let's
it
move on
time.
And discuss the lines. You were love cut off from love, truth nailed down by lies. How does this apply to the crucifixion, do you think?
You know, I think of love cut off from love as love, as being cut off from God, is what I think the poet is saying here, when really it's just another human response of a human being deciding that they're cut off from God. God's not deciding that. It also really personal, this line really personalizes the crucifixion, I think, because it connects to our action, which could be lies or just sin, that are really the actual nails that are binding Christ to the cross in this situation. How do you think of, what do you think about that?
Oh, I like that. I like that interpretation. I thought of it more as Jesus is love, yet he's being placed in this most unlovable of situations.
Yeah.
He's been cut off from love, certainly human love, certainly, you know, all, yeah, it, he's been, he is utter truth, yet it took such scheming and such lies to put him on that cross. So it's a study of opposites, I think, and maybe the most glaring one in all of history in some ways.
I think so, too, and this event always underscores for me the importance of silence as a response and letting kind of the truth of walking the walk speak for itself. I mean, here's a really good example of a time when, you know, when you get right down to it, Lori, a lot of us and our human fellows, colleagues on this earth would have been up there or on our way up to the cross, naming names, correcting lies, speaking in our own defense. I mean, and Jesus remains silent in the face of accusations that are being cast from all directions throughout a pretty long period of time through the whole Passion. And I just, that is a really important example, I think, for us as we move through life about how to respond, not in self-defense, in letting our lives be the response to who we are.
Beautifully put. Yeah, I can't even imagine remaining quiet while people are spitting on you and beating you. And Well,
no, I think of that one.
Go ahead.
Well, I just think of the one response Christ gives is, "You say that I am." You know, or what do you say that I am? Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. Go on with your thing. You know me, I'll go off on 12 directions here.
The poem posits that Jesus must have wanted, quote-unquote, to explode, but that it was forbidden, a test. What is your interpretation of that? What do you suppose it means?
Well, I kind of view this as an Eden moment, a Garden of Eden moment that really forces us to see that, again, if Jesus was truly human, Jesus had free will in this. And there was a choice here. Yes, Jesus must have wanted to explode. And I guess I don't feel like it was forbidden for Jesus to explode. I feel like Jesus had the same choice that humans have about whether to walk forward and follow God's will or not. And the lesson to me is Jesus followed God's will. Jesus went forward with free will and made this choice. I think that's really significant.
It is. It's very powerful. See, I come at it a little bit different only because I learned just this week that the Quran teaches that the person who died on the cross wasn't Jesus, but that he swapped souls with somebody. They say Joseph of Arimathea, maybe even Judas, and that's the person who suffered and died. And, you know, respectfully to Islam, I think not dealing with the reality of Christ's suffering leaves us sort of spiritually poorer. It's hard to think about him dealing with that kind of pain, but it's necessary, too, to understand the enormity of the act, don't you think?
Yeah, but whoa, I'm still trying to digest what you just said at the beginning.
Yeah,
so
it's very interesting.
Who swaps souls? I mean, doesn't this sort of be, this is a whole other subject, we can't get off too long, but someone swaps souls with Jesus, so tell me.
So that body, that person, was being inhabited by the soul of someone else, whereas Jesus himself, he just rose. You know, he rose, but he didn't have to go through the suffering bit of it.
Oh.
Instead, you know, Judas in Jesus' body, Joseph of Arimathea in Jesus' body, went through that.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a lot
wow.
to take in and interesting and made me really think about, well, what does that mean? What does that say about our perceptions of Jesus and how other people perceive Jesus, and why is it important that that suffering be taken out of the equation? All of those things.
Well, and what, I mean, what does it say, yeah, about the whole perspective on what suffering means in life?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a. I mean, there's a whole political discussion we could have here too, which we won't and don't have time for. But I'm not. It's not sitting well with me. I mean, I'll think about it more. But that would really undo a pretty 50-year lifetime of perspective, I guess. Wow.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. Well, the poem talks about something that we know from Scripture, that the earth itself reacts to Jesus' death. What is the importance of that?
Well, I think that's one of the most beautiful, if there's beauty in this poem, I think one of the most beautiful pieces of it is the phrase, the universe caught hold of your pain. Because I think it really, I mean, you know, I am big into nature and creation and nature and living things. And I think it speaks volumes about our need to understand that God's creation is not just human beings. It is all of creation, and that this Christian event, this world history event, impacted the universe, not just the people who live on the earth, that it actually shook every foundation that there was. It was so much bigger than just humans.
Right, right. And I think of it not only as God's reaction, but sort of the wisdom of nature, earth itself recognizes that horror of Jesus' death. When we humans, who are supposedly, you know, above all simple nature, we didn't get it. There's a lesson there.
Yep, I agree.
Well, the last lines of the poem really hit at the heart of the matter, as the poet watches the crucifixion himself, quote-unquote, at a distance, like a murderer witnessing a wrongful arrest. What emotions do these images stir in you, and do you feel any kinship with the poet?
This is a haunting ending. I mean, I find this
yeah.
very powerful. And, you know, I had to think about the writing process here, and I had to think, wow, did this line just come to the poet? I mean, for me, I think, was this, did the poet back into the whole thing because of this vision in his mind? You know, it doesn't feel backed into, but this is powerful. And it makes, as a reader, it makes me connect very closely to it, because you can just feel this hidden, this person who's trying to hide, who's kind of guilty, like, oh man, somebody else has taken the rap. Maybe I've gotten away with it. Maybe I feel guilty. Maybe I can just go on and no one will know. I mean, there's so many relatable images there for me. What about you?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I feel just a terrible kinship. Whenever we let ourselves look away from the crucifixion, we forget just how big a deal it was and is. Because Christ died for our sins. All of us. I mean, we put him on that cross. And we shouldn't distance ourselves from that reality, but remember it and in a way celebrate it. Because that act then saved us from that horrible guilt and that horrible sin.
Yeah, yeah. You know, another scene that comes to my mind that I can kind of relate to this vision of this person standing at a distance with their collar up. Have you ever been in a car driving and you'll drive by an intersection where there's a person who is begging or who's a homeless person with a sign that says, you know, we'll work for food or whatever. And you kind of have this inside turmoil that says, I should look at the person because they're a human being and they're suffering and maybe this is for real. And I should roll my window down and give them something or say an encouraging word. And then there's this emotion that says, keep your eyes forward. They can't, if you don't see them, they don't see you. I mean, that whole dynamic to me is a lot about what this ending line brings to me.
Absolutely. Yes. That acknowledgement of suffering and what that does to us.
Yeah. And as I get older with that specific example, which I think is like almost like a crucifixion example for me, you know, I used to think I was averting my eyes because I didn't want the other person to be embarrassed or make them feel uncomfortable. But I realize as I get older that reaction really isn't much about that other person. It's really much about my own discomfort and not knowing what to do and feeling, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, at my parish, our pastor reads the whole Passion story himself. Growing up, we parishioners always participated in the reading. I did the narration in seventh grade. But we played the part of the fickle crowd who calls for Christ's death. It's always uncomfortable to be yelling, crucify him, crucify him. But I miss that now. I think it's important for us to recognize our complicity in the crucifixion. So let's discuss this. Do you feel that we are complicit in Jesus' death? How so? And is it important to remember this and why?
Well, I do. I mean, I feel like we're complicit in the ongoing. I mean, it's not just one time of death. It's just ongoing. You know, yes, I do. I think human sinfulness and humankind is responsible for it. I mean, if we weren't, why would Jesus have had to do it? So, I mean, that would be that perspective. It's disappointing to me that your pastor reads the whole Passion, because I would think there's really significant intention in not doing it that way. I mean, I think part of the reason it's done the way it was done is so that people do feel that connection to what happened. I mean, it is hard to sit in there, stand there with shoulder to shoulder with people and say, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. But I think that's significant. I get that your pastor wants to participate in that part of it, but I think you can do that. I mean, so read the part along with the congregation, you know?
I never thought I'd miss that.
I see why you do. I mean, I think that is one technique it's easy to just let that whole Passion reading go by if you're not having to read pretty closely to watch for your prompt, for your part in it. And I do think, for me, that has been a part of my attentiveness to it. Because when you're just hearing it and you're just listening to someone read it, it's easy to zone out and go to your happy place. And then it's really not very impactful.
Right. Right, I agree. And, you know, I was thinking today, you're an oldest child, so I'm sure you're familiar with the whole setting an example for your siblings thing.
Yeah.
Think about being punished not only for what your siblings have done, but what they might do in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, till the end of time, sin. That, mm-hmm. I can hardly wrap my brain around it.
Yeah.
But you can't acknowledge the enormity of the resurrection without dealing with the enormity of the crucifixion.
I think that's right. You cannot, nor do you need to take them separately. I mean, it's not all or nothing, but it's both and. It's not either or in some of these things. Yeah.
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 And I think this is also relates to our next question, which is, if we are indeed complicit in the crucifixion, which I think we both agree we are, what part do we play in the resurrection?
Well, I mean, the obvious literal things, you know, human beings played a part in being there at the empty tomb and finding the tomb empty and finding the burial garments and going out and being afraid and reacting and then seeing Jesus. I mean, all those things were part of. But I think in our own lives, knowing about the resurrection helps us be mindful of moments of resurrection in our own lives and others' lives. You know, moments where we forgive someone or we are forgiven and we have a clean start. Certainly the sacrament of reconciliation to me is a way that we have an ongoing connection to the resurrection and responsibility for the resurrection. I mean, I could name a whole list of things, but I think we're responsible, Lori, for being what I would say would be a resurrection people. We are responsible for carrying on the possibilities involved in the resurrection as part of our Christian journey. I mean, I think that's what our Christian responsibility really, really is.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah, it was just one of those moments where my head exploded and I thought, we're completely part of the resurrection, but not because of anything we did. You know?
Right.
Jesus took on all of that in order to give us this reward that was completely undeserved. And again, it's so much to wrap your head around.
Yeah. It is. And when you think about it in terms of daily living, it should be a challenge to us as we examine all the things we do during the day. I think of all the human interactions we have and the times I withhold forgiveness or I withhold kindness or I withhold grace from someone. You know, those are examples of a focus on the suffering and crucifixion and not on the resurrection. And I think that's why, you know, it's not enough to go just through Lent. You have to go through the whole Lenten. You have to go through the whole thing to complete it, you know, or you're not going to be able to transcend all of the sinfulness that's in our world. You're not going to be able to make good choices because you're not going to see the positive, the resurrection side of it.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe if we thought more about, okay, if I choose to do this, then what am I doing? You know, I'm putting another nail into the cross, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If we were more intentional about our actions in the light of Jesus' suffering, you know, maybe that would change our behavior.
Yeah, yeah. And I think
I'm thinking
of people I know who've gone through significant suffering due to illness or something like that, you know, where there has really been physical suffering. It makes a lot of sense when you think about the fact that often people who go through some kind of physical suffering, illness, whatever, are people who become stronger, more faith-filled Christian people, or they are people who totally go the other way and lose hope and become, you know, I mean, those are examples of, I think, what I just said. You know, there are folks who you've got to experience the whole gamut to get to the resurrection piece. And if you miss the resurrection piece, you're stuck at the crucifixion. It is not an easy or good way to live.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That I'm going to have to think about. Okay, last question. What should our focus be during this powerful time of remembrance? Should we focus on Christ crucified or on the resurrection? On guilt or salvation?
What is April Fool's Day? I guess this is a trick question. I don't know. I'd say must we choose, I think that we have had 40 days to focus on the crucifixion and the struggle and the loneliness and the examination of conscience. And I think we've got to focus more on the resurrection as we're at this point. We have had long waiting, and there will still be long waiting, but I really believe that our salvation and our ability to live as good, congruent Christians on earth is going to be more successful if we can focus on the resurrection. Acknowledge the crucifixion, but act because of the resurrection.
Yeah, yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, it's important to remember our guilt and deal with it, but then move on, as you say, to the salvation and resurrection. They're both important,
yeah.
But you need the one to really rejoice in the other. And I rejoicing, ultimately, is where I feel we ought to land in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have to, I just think we have to continue to keep to work at lifting each other up. And that, to me, is more resurrectional than the other side.
Yeah, agreed. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Please join us next week. What will our topic of conversation be, Alice?
Well, I am listening to the book, All the Light We Cannot See, and I cannot remember the author. I don't know if you've read it, but there's some interesting things there. So I think we may touch on that one if I finish it up. But until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book. Have a great week.